What do you do to prepare yourself for the day as a leader and to channel those thoughts in a positive way?
The very first thing is you must have a plan. Without a plan, without a strategic intent, none of this is possible.
If you don't have that strategy, it creates a vacuum and these other things can come in.
Welcome back to CEO Tech Live, where the greatest minds in business and tech share their hard-earned lessons, insights, and stories. These are the change champions of industry. You'll discover the keys to success for leading innovation, growth, and stability within your organization. This podcast is powered by Hexaware, the world's most loved digital transformation partner who seeks to create smiles through great people and technology. I'm your host, Ben Fanning. Let's go.
And welcome back to CEO Tech Live, powered by Hexaware. Today, I have a treat for you with Chris Rowell. Chris is the Chief Information and Digital Officer at HNI, the global provider of workplace furnishings and residential buildings. He's also held previous senior leadership roles at Ricoh, Wipro Digital, Motorola, Oracle, Hospira, so many tremendous brands. And Chris has changed the nature of IT from a back office function to a front office co-creator of synergy and partnership with the business. Chris, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me in this podcast.
Yeah, man. So I've been looking forward to this. Let's dig in. What lesson early in your career has helped you the most?
You know, the three biggest lessons. First is awareness. Awareness is very important. I'll tell you a story during my college days, which honed that awareness skill. Next is being a student. And the third thing is about collaboration. Okay. All these three things are important. About awareness, there is a story. I had a very close friend in my grad school. He was also my roommate and took the same classes that I had taken. And in the morning, the alarm would ring and he would say, Chris, let's snooze the alarm. And we would snooze it once, twice, thrice, before it was too long, and we would jump out of the bed and run to class. And of course, we would be a few minutes late for the class. And fast forward during lunch, he would say, you know, it was a mistake snoozing all this because we missed the best part of the class. You know, that day, probably the professor talked about an assignment or something. So I would agree. And then during lunch, you know, I went to school at Mississippi State. They had the best curly fries, with Cajun spices. So Yum. He would say, let's just get some fries. And I'm like, no, you know, we'll feel sluggish and such. But he would convince me to have 2 pounds of curly fries. And later on, we would go to the library and, of course, sluggish. And we would say, let's come back. We'd go back to the apartment and sleep. And the day would go on like this. And later on, we shouldn't have had those fries kind of thing.
Indigestion.
And in the night, we would same thing again. We would sit and start having beers. Long before we knew it, it would be 12 o'clock. I'm like, hey, let's go to sleep. One beer won't hurt. One, two, three. And before we knew it, it would be 4 o'clock in the morning. And go to sleep. And of course, the alarm would ring. And he would say, I have a terrible headache. Let's skip the class today. And I would concur. And during lunchtime, he would say, you know, it was a terrible idea drinking all that much because we missed the class this morning. So this friend of mine was a really bad influence on me. First, he would say, let's wake up late. And then flip and say, we made a mistake. Let's eat those fries. Oh, my God, we shouldn't have eaten it. Let's drink those beers. I'm like, it was a bad idea drinking that beers. And this friend of mine is none other than my own inner voice. We all have this inner voice, and we are so obsequious and subservient to this inner voice, thinking that this is the gospel, and it has our best interest. But it always doesn't. For example, it says, hey, go eat that ice cream. Eat that, and in half an hour, it will flip and say, you have no willpower. Why did you eat that ice cream? Go buy that stock. Go buy that stock. And you go buy that stock. And God forbid the stock prices should fall down, that voice will come back and say, you are such an idiot. Why did you buy that stock? So it is very important to become aware of this inner critique because there is nobody outside of us that criticizes us as much as this inner critique. So that is what I'm talking when I said awareness. So becoming aware of this inner critique, putting a mechanical plan, and despite this negative voice and the critique, following that mechanical plan that is very critical. And that has helped me a lot in my career. That's the first thing.
Well, that's powerful. And that is not at all where I thought that story was going. The inner voice was telling you, hey, eat this, drink this, do this. And you were listening to it. Yeah. When did you have that revelation of, wait, there's a voice here and that voice is not me, or that voice is not helping and I need to do something different?
Yeah, that is during that college days itself.
That's when you realized it?
Yeah, because I got sick and tired of being sick and tired of this voice. Wow. It went on and on. So then in reflection, in sitting down saying, what is this thing? First I say do it, and then I say, why did I do it? And that is when I became aware of this inner voice. That's not me. It is just my thoughts. So there is a separation of who I am versus what thoughts and energies that I have.
So if you don't listen to the inner voice, who do you listen to?
No, I'm not saying don't listen to the inner voice.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying this inner voice, unless you are aware of it and where it is taking you, if you blindly follow the energies of this inner voice, today it takes you here, tomorrow, or in the next few minutes, it will start criticizing you about some incident which happened 30 years back. It's like, you shouldn't have done that.
Oh, yeah.
So it will take you all over. But unless you become aware of these thoughts, this inner voice, and have a mechanical plan and learn to ignore. So thinking is different than thoughts. Thinking is useful. But blindly following these thoughts are not useful.
Yeah, this idea of you are not your thoughts. You have thoughts.
Correct.
And so when you start thinking about, well, I'm going to make some changes, you obviously did because you've had a lot of success since the days of beers and curly fries.
Yeah.
What do you do to prepare yourself for the day as a leader and to channel those thoughts in a positive way?
The very first thing is you must have a plan. Without a plan, without a strategic intent, none of this is possible, because all these negative energies come in when there is no plan. So first, if we have a plan, that's number one. And number two, despite the plan, we will all skid in our lives. You know, just like driving a car, there is always a skid somewhere. And when that skid happens, this inner voice, this negative voice will come into play. And it will say, oh my God, you have no idea what you're doing. So there, that's when, at that moment, if we are aware and if we make the choice of either listening to this inner voice, which will drain us, or staying focused on that strategic plan we have, despite this inner voice. So that's how I tackle it. And I'm not saying that I have completely succeeded, but the awareness of this inner voice reduces the strength of those negative thoughts and helps us focus. So first thing is have that strategic plan. Second is, despite the skid, stay focused on that strategic plan, and automatically you will get there.
It requires such intention to have that strategy. And I can see if you don't have that strategy, it creates a vacuum and these other things can come in. I got to tell you, Chris, this is not what I expected from a CIO to have this. You're sort of like the philosopher, leadership philosopher, CIO. Have you had coaches or influences in your life that have opened this up for you? Because this is not something you would think would be prevalent in the tech world. Maybe it should be.
It should be. You know, awareness is a very key. And of course, I have had a lot of coaches, starting from my grandparents to my own parents. And later on, my professors and students at the university, as well as all the jobs I've taken, every manager. And I've learned bits and pieces from each one of them. And there has never been a person I've met who has not taught me something or the other. So the learning, that's the very second point. And you said, hey, what is the tricks of leadership, or what is the foundation of leadership, is being a student, always being a student of.
Even when you're CIO.
Even when I'm CIO, there is, you know, the paradigm is shifting so fast. Every day, the technology paradigm and the business paradigm shifts. And if you are not a student, we will become irrelevant in the next 6 months. So being a student and remaining a student for our life is very critical, especially in the technology realm. So that is the second part of this foundation of this leadership. And the third part, I said three things, right? Awareness, being a student. Third thing is collaboration. You know, in this digital economy, knowledge is not power anymore. We can get knowledge all over the place. I can have a generative AI tool generating all that knowledge. But the ability to collaborate with our people, collaborate with our trade partners, with our strategic partners, collaborating with the business and co-creating synergies. So learning that skill and honing that skill of collaboration is very key. It's very foundational for any digital leader.
What's your favorite collaboration strategy? Because I think about IT, you're running 100 miles an hour. Yeah. The other functions are too. You're probably working in different places, different time zones. Like, how do you, what's your collaboration approach whenever people are running in so quickly in different directions?
Yeah. So, see, collaboration is an effect. There are some, just like a radio, you tweak some buttons, it will play a different station, raise the volume, reduce the volume. So there are some actions you can take to increase that collaboration. I cannot stand up on the top of a mountain and say, collaborate.
It would be nice.
It will be nice.
But, yes.
So what are those tweaks? The first thing is to help them understand that if we hold knowledge and we don't collaborate and we don't give that knowledge to others, everyone will come to us asking us to solve problems using that knowledge. By the end of the day, it will appease our ego, but it will drain our energy because we are the only people who can solve that problem. Mm. But instead, if I teach that to someone else, it won't help my ego because people won't come to me. But by the end of the day, I will go home totally satisfied that I was able to give that knowledge to someone else and my energy is not drained. So collaboration is an effect and the precursor or the harbinger for collaboration is giving. So that's what I keep preaching. It's in my practice, what do I give and what do I tell people to give, so on and so forth. So it's all about, the focus is about giving, which enables collaboration.
Yeah, I love that. And that's powerful. It's like the CIO becomes the teacher. And it used to be, I mean, there's a lot of power in, hey, we have all the technology. We know what's happening. You don't. You have to come to us. And that's a very old school mindset. And what you're saying is, hey, the new way of tech is our job is to go teach people about what's happening in IT and empower them with that. That's very different. What have you noticed since you stepped into this CIO teacher type role? Like, what have been the results?
You know, the results have been excellent. Also, you're talking about the talent and the people. I will not use the word I'm teaching. Okay. I'm co-learning with all my people.
Okay.
So my philosophy is very simple. Hire the best, step outside the way of their way, and let them drive the transformation. And just like, you know, you went to Alabama, Bear Bryant used to stand up and observe and watch.
In the tower. That's
right. In the tower. And that's the same thing. As a CIO, we just have to stand up and step outside the way and keep observing. And whenever we see that they are drifting away from where we are headed, just do some course correction and co-learn with the team. And that is what enables. And the results we have achieved is here to see, right? When I was at RICO, within the first 2 years of recreating the portfolio, we were able to improve the top line by about 17% and able to improve the bottom line by 540 basis points. And the same kinds of results we achieved in Oracle, in Motorola, as well as in my current position. And none of which is because of me. It is despite me. It is because of the people. And stepping outside their way and letting them drive things.
Yeah, powerful leadership approach. Not always easy because you've got a lot of technical knowledge yourself. I mean, where do you draw the line of, I can do that job, but I'm not going to do it because my team needs to do it, even if maybe they're not going as fast or as effectively or efficiently as you would have approached it.
Yeah. You know, this was another learning experience. Thanks for the question. When I was in Oracle, I ran around saying, I am the best C programmer ever. I can solve anything. I can do anything. But later on, when I started inheriting teams and the teams started getting bigger, I had to get away from being a perfectionist to being an enabler. Even if my team can get up to 70% efficiency and effectiveness, that was good enough. That's the first enabler. The second thing is, I learned never to carry a hammer as a toolkit in my management box. Because in Oracle, yeah, the philosophy was, it didn't matter how many dead bodies we left behind, but get to the end. But that was a bad philosophy to learn when I was beginning my career. But when I came to Motorola, it was a total different philosophy. The philosophy there was, you know, end does not justify the means. The means to an end is as important. So engage, collaborate, enable. These are the things that I learned. And in learning, it was very difficult for me because I was really good being a technologist. And here I had to let go of my knowledge and settle, even if the inputs, sorry, even if the work products and the outputs were mediocre, I had to settle for it. So that's where the transformation happened. When I started settling and started enabling them, then their outputs came to par with what I was able to produce, and then it far exceeded what I could produce myself. So that letting go of that obsession of perfection helped us get beyond what I was able to produce to much bigger than what the whole team could produce.
So reaching back in the files, what was your first job and how does it influence your leadership today?
My first job, I had graduated from Mississippi State University. I came to Chicago. This was in a consulting organization. It's a very interesting story. When I took the job up, I was a good C programmer. So I went knocking on the doors of every vice president and telling them, I am the best, give me something. And true enough, the company had created a platform and sold it to an insurance company. And they found that there was a defect in that platform by which that insurance company was losing hundreds of thousands of dollars each month. So they brought the platform back, and the guys who had created the platform had left the company, and I was the only C programmer there. So they gave me that, hey, go fix it.
You're the last person standing.
Standing.
You fix it.
You fix it. And then each and every day, line by line by line, page by page, I went through that entire code trying to fix it. And I would make some change, reconfigure the program, compile it, test the output. And this went on for days and nights and weekdays, weekends, for 2 weeks. And absolutely no outcome came out of it. And I told you there is this inner critique. And this inner critique showed up saying, Chris, you are an idiot. Why did you tell them you are so good? If you had stayed under the radar, you know, you'd be okay. Today, you could lose your job because now you cannot solve this problem because this is way beyond you. So it was very difficult, but I had to ignore that inner voice and keep doing what I was doing, which is go through the code and recompile. And in the third week when I was getting coffee, something dawned on me that the algorithm that this platform was sitting on, maybe the defect is there. And I ran back, fixed that algorithm and ran the program. And it compiled and gave the right outputs. But there was a problem. The program, which was taking 2 hours to run to create this or to generate these reports, now ran in just 2 minutes. So I could not believe. So I sat all evening, all night, verifying the output with different inputs. Still, it was running good. So when I told my managers next day, they couldn't believe and they retested and everything. But finally, they found that not only that I had fixed the problem, I had also optimized the platform. What took 2 hours now took 2 minutes. And they thought I was a genius, but I really thought it was accidental that I was able to fix it. But now when I look back, the lesson is very simple. I got so deep into that code, I had become the code. So that is the lesson. It is like to solve anything, we have to become that which we are trying to solve. And that is when we can solve it. So go deeper, learn more. Go deeper and understand the needs of your people. Go deeper, understand the business, the needs of the business. Go deeper, understand the technology. And bring all these things together. You know, there is so many confluences of patterns that emerge by bringing your teams, bringing the technology paradigm, and bringing the business needs together, putting them in a pot, and then the solutions will appear by itself. So that is what I learned from my first job. I still use it today.
To solve the code, you must become the code. And to go that deep, and I think it's problematic for leaders who have a lot of reports, because you have to spend time with the people, spend time with your customers. You have to really choose full engagement to do that. What are you sharing with your team to help them engage at that level?
See, with the team, there are three things very important for a leader. First is strategy, so that everybody can focus on where we are headed. The second thing is the structure. Are we structured right so that we can execute? So first thing is, are we doing the right thing? Structure is, are we doing the thing right? And the third thing is culture. And culture is what I spend most of the time with the team. It is a culture of collaboration, culture of customer orientation, culture of results driven. You know, within IT, we get so bogged down with technology. And I talk to my team, they're like, hey, we did this, we have done this, we have installed all these switches and all those kinds of things. It's like, why did we start doing that? Because we wanted to improve network and application performance. So how close are we to that result? Let's focus on the results. And these are all activities. So let's report on the result as opposed to reporting on the activities. So that is the culture mindset of results orientation as opposed to activity orientation. So this is where I spend most of my time. It is expecting, inspecting to expect, as well as being a student and co-learning how we get there with my members, with my employees.
So good. So one day when it's time for you to leave HNI, what do you hope your leadership legacy will be?
My leadership legacy is there was a leader who co-learned every aspect of strategy, structure, and culture with us. It is, he left a legacy of a organization whose DNA is all about learning and co-creating in partnership with the business, in partnership with the technology partners, and in partnership with the employees.
Truly an inspired leadership vision. So bringing it back to Hexaware here, what's been the benefit of working with them?
See, if I have to say one thing about Hexaware, the fact that this partner in trials and in tribulations, they have stood with me. So I have not outsourced any technology work or such. I have taken the most complex parts of what we could not solve as a team and outsourced our headache to Hexaware. And it's not like they were able to walk on ice and walk on water and solve everything. But despite such complex problems that I've given, they have stood with us and taken the heat and the abuse, and still they're standing. They're standing right next to me, and they have helped us succeed throughout.
Sounds like a great partner.
It's an excellent partner, and especially when it comes to emerging technologies and digital technologies like, you know, IoTs, smart factory, supplier collaboration, AR, VR, and generative AI. Anytime there is an emerging technology that comes into play that we have to utilize and disrupt ourselves and co-create synergies in partnership with the business, my partner to enable me do that is always Hexaware.
Chris, thank you for coming on CEO Tech Live. It was a pleasure.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to CEO Tech Live, powered by Hexaware. Make sure to subscribe now so you're notified when a new episode is released.